This episode of the AWS Morning Brief is sponsored by AWS Solutions. You have AWS problems, they have AWS solutions. These handy one-click, get started up and running with various solutions, be they native first-party offerings or third-party offerings, depending entirely upon what you pick, are well worth your time to take a look at. For more, visit snark.cloud/AWS solutions. That's snark.cloud/AWS solutions. 'Twas the night before Christmas and up in Seattle. This is covered by NDA, but I'm still going to tattle. Engineers were all working, managers flogging them with belts. If they wanted work-life balance, they clearly would work somewhere else. Marketing folk working late at a VP's request, giving services names that were tepid at best. The Duckbill Group was on a break, and I was drinking wine, when suddenly I heard a horrible noise. It was Chime. I spat, took, and shuddered, as anyone would, for Chime never beckons for anything good. When what to my incredulous eyes should appear but an Amazon namer? I'm not kidding here. I have a chihuahua who craps in the house, a small tiny daughter, and long-suffering spouse. These varied mammals have one thing the same. Nobody at AWS had given them names. Bracket and Pinpoint, Macy, Cognito. Somehow they launched Snowball Edge without an Andy Jassy veto. We're launching a service that quick drains your wallet. It's ready to go. Now what the hell do we call it? I'm sorry to take you away from your boozing. It's just like Chef InSpec, but way more confusing. I stopped and I thought, perhaps more than I should. Nobody at AWS gives a service a name that is good. I suggested, well, why not call it Config Policy Rules? That's way too straightforward. Here we name things like fools. Never when naming do we measure performance, so your naming is awesome, but we'll call it conformance. I'm sorry I tried, but you'll see in your Slacks the release of new AWS conformance packs. My naming friend messaged as he went back to work with a whine. Happy holidays from AWS. You should log out of Chime. Given that there were remarkably few releases last week, let's instead spend today on what we're called Listener Mailbag. Pete Bray writes in, it seems that you're increasingly antagonistic towards AWS. Doesn't that impact your key relationships and business? That's a fair question, but not really. Obviously, I have a business relationship with AWS. For example, the beginning of this episode was sponsored by AWS Solutions. They're well aware of what they're signing up for when they go into business with me. They understand that they don't have creative control over what else I say. And especially for a podcast like this, where it's very fast turnaround, they don't have the ability or time to review what I say before it goes out. The argument instead has been that I've been extraordinarily authentic, and when I say that AWS does something terrible, which I do when they tend to do terrible things, and given their size and scale, well, that tends to happen multiple times a week. But because I call that out, I'm also afforded certain authenticity points when I say that they do something good. So given my nature and how I tend to position myself, when I say that AWS nails something, it's believed. Also, again, in case I hadn't been particularly clear on this, 90 to 95% of what AWS does is awesome. That missing 5 to 10% is where hilarity lives. I get to sit here and point out the small cracks in the armor and have fun with it, and not for nothing, but very often the things that I point out lead to a better outcome for everyone. So there's really no one on the other side of this issue from where I sit. I'm sure someone at AWS is super salty at me, but let's not kid ourselves. They're more than a couple hundred people. So there is no Ted AWS over there who decides whether they like me or don't. It's a whole bunch of small teams with a whole bunch of people involved. Some people like me. Some people presumably can't stand me, but I don't hear from those folks, for better or worse. Thanks for asking. Daniel IP writes in, rename AWS. Too easy, but will you just for you? If I had to rename it, Amazon Cloud. Of course, if I could really rename it, I would probably spin off AWS entirely so that the terrible and horrifying things that Amazon gets up to doesn't have the same level of impact on their cloud sales, but obviously that one wasn't left to me. Frankly, I'd probably spin it off entirely, but that is a bit like trying to pee into the wind at this point. It's not going to get you very far. Fair question. Thanks. Jay Gordon writes in with, what's broken about cloud billing? And sure, I built an entire company around solving that problem, but by and large, it comes down to lack of predictability. And I don't really have a clear answer for this. People aren't going to say, use as much Amazon Cloud resources as you want for X dollars per month. It's consumption-based billing. What you use is what you're billed for, and it's very difficult to predict what you're going to use in advance. This is a very different model than most other on-premises style environments, and that is, in many cases, one of the biggest challenges that companies are going to have to work with as they migrate into cloud or fall screaming into the sky, which I think is a better way of saying migrate to cloud. Thanks for the question. Matt Stratton writes in the middle of a 24-hour period in which he only tweets nice things about me. Why am I so good-looking? Well, thank you. The secret, as you can tell by any selfie that I take on the internet, is that I never, ever, ever shut my mouth. That makes everyone look good. What a wonderful question. Thank you. Jeff Bochtel writes in, do you think an account billing limit that, say, prevents new stuff from being turned up is ever going to happen, or will we be doomed to beg AWS for refunds due to leaked API keys until the sun engulfs the earth? Great question. The problem with building out a free tier that functions meaningfully differently is that either you're exempting an awful lot of services that AWS would really like to see adopted, or you're setting up an alternative model where suddenly, when you hit the limits of the free tier, your environment suddenly slams to a halt and drops customers on the floor. Now, none of those are ideal outcomes. I think that the answer is going to be possibly a second type of free tier that you'd have to explicitly opt into, or say, this is a student account. I don't care if you turn my stuff off, but I really care if you charge me $30 for the month. So I think that's something that's going to wind up seeing some evolution at some point. It would almost have to, just because right now people see free tier and they don't trust it. It erodes customer trust as one of the first engagements people have with AWS. And I can't imagine that that's going to be something that they'll tolerate for too terribly much longer, but we'll see. Sudish KR writes in with, what techniques have I used for vendor contract negotiation? What's worked / failed? I think that there's a common misconception around negotiation where you don't get to win unless the other party loses. Sonia Gupta once famously said that the whole point of negotiation is not to come up with a story where everyone wins so much as it is to come up with an outcome where everyone is a little bit unhappy. I don't know that I necessarily subscribe to that philosophy in this context, but I'm certainly not flying to Seattle when doing AWS negotiations to start taking execs' kids or pets hostage. I think the answer comes down to there's an awful lot you can ask for, and that list of asks gets greater and greater as your spend gets larger and larger when dealing with any vendor. The problem is do you actually want or need these things? What outcomes do you actually need? Okay, if you get heavy discounting on a particular service, for example, great. Are you going to use that service at all, or is it just a token victory that you get to say that you pulled one over on the big company? I find that tends to be counterproductive. From my perspective, figure out what you're doing, where you're going, and what things you absolutely need to have, would like to have, or don't really care if you had, and then proceed from there. Not understanding what it is you actually want is probably the single biggest mistake that I see here. Rui Gonsalves writes in, which AWS services have a better trade-off when comparing cost and lock-in? My perspective on that is that first, you're going to need to figure out what your use case looks like. One person's awesome advance is someone else's unacceptable lock-in. Secondly, I'm not generally scared of vendor lock-in in any meaningful sense if you've done a reasonably diligent job of vendor selection in the first place. Pick a cloud provider. I personally don't care which one. You probably care which one. I don't care which one. And go all in on whatever it is that you're building on top of them. Now, having at least theoretical path for exodus is going to be important from a strategic perspective, but actually building it before you need to may very well not be the right path. I think that you're going to find inherent lock-in whenever you start developing to a particular provider's APIs. I think that you're always going to have lock-in regardless of what database you're choosing. You are locked in. Even a MySQL to MySQL migration across cloud providers is as far from simple as you can get. And of course, going higher on up the stack, none of these services tend to be common. They tend to be extremely differentiated, and that causes issues. This episode is also sponsored by Chaos Search. That's right, you can chaos search your way to find answers to questions like these and more with the right data sets. Chaos Search provides an Elasticsearch compatible API where your data lives within S3. Amazon Elasticsearch offers something like this called Ultra Warm, except it costs way more, is nowhere near as effective or as efficient, and has a stupid name. Chaos Search, for all of your chaotic searching needs. My thanks to them for their sponsorship. To learn more, visit chaossearch.io and tell them Corey sent you so they can roll their eyes and say, oh hell, not again. My thanks to them for their sponsorship this year. Looking forward to a bright 2020. Ciaran types, do I believe that Oracle Cloud will be around in 10 years? Oh boy, that's going to get me in trouble. The short answer is yes, in some form, but is it a form that customers are going to need? I don't know. One of the strengths that Oracle brings to the table, in seriousness and respect to them, is they have a tremendous customer base, and migrating these things off is incredibly, incredibly challenging. Look at Amazon, a company that was actively incentivized to get the hell off of Oracle as quickly as possible, and they're stocked with incredibly gifted technologists, and it took them over 3 years to do it. Most companies don't have that A, level of expertise, or B, level of incentive to get off of them. Oracle's not going away anytime soon, and I strongly believe that their commitment to the cloud is sincere. How that's going to manifest and how that's going to look compared to other cloud providers is still very much an open question, but I wouldn't count them out, and I would not count them as being just a large legacy software company. I think down that path lies some very interesting and potentially dangerous lazy thinking. Excellent question. Alejandra writes in, what are your top tips for creating a huge fundraiser based on a funny shirt that anybody else could recreate so as to make another kind of fundraiser on their own, asking for a friend? Okay, the Last Week in AWS charity t-shirt did extraordinarily well this year. It raised $18,000 for St. Jude's. So tip one, have a large audience to whom to present this. Two, pick a charity that absolutely no one with a soul is going to be on the other side of. In my case, I found that Kids with Cancer is just such a charity, though there are, of course, many others. Thirdly, the joke has to work, and it has to wind up being something that fits on a shirt that people can enjoy or make a statement with while still benefiting a good cause. And, of course, fourthly, have the best audience in the world. That's where you folks come in. Thanks. Zenant writes, what do I think the best consulting opportunities around AWS are currently? I would say that tends to be something that is almost entirely removed from a particular provider or platform. I decided to focus on AWS bill optimization because it was an expensive problem that a lot of people I spoke to were currently experiencing, and surprise, I knew how to do something about it. I think that finding the expensive problem that other people will pay to make go away is really where good consulting practices come out of. I think that trying to force whatever it is that you're good at into solving various problems is where a lot of people tend to founder. That's something that I think transcends technology consulting. It really applies to consulting across the board, and I could do an entire podcast episode on this alone. But look for the expensive problems. Look for the things that people hate doing that you know how to fix and can fix them relatively rapidly. And then don't bill for time, bill for outcome. I think that really leads to the best results for you and your customers. Zenit writes in with a second question. What is your opinion on the AWS certification program? I think like most certification programs, you put into it determines what you get out of it. If you want it to have a badge on your LinkedIn profile, okay, great. If you're a company trying to get your 4,000 employees trained and up to speed on this new cloud thing you're doing, well, it's a terrific way of evaluating people's approaches and learning path. It builds a curriculum for you. Does it differentiate you as an individual from the rest of the herd? Well, sort of. I think in the job market, you need to have a piece of paper that says you are good at the thing you're being hired to do. Maybe it's a degree, maybe it's a certification, but far and away, the best piece of paper that I found is a resume detailing that you've solved similar types of problems with similar technologies. That tends to vary a lot based upon what you value and how you tend to approach your career, but I'm not opposed to it by any stretch of the imagination. For what I do, is it particularly useful? Not really. For other folks, would it be useful? Most definitely. It really just depends. And today's last question comes from Bethany. She's saying, okay, are you done podcasting now? Can you go and take the family out for breakfast as I committed to doing? Great. That wraps up what I've got to say for this week. Thank you all for listening. It's been a fantastic year. If you have questions, please feel free to write in with them. I think this has been interesting enough that I'm thrilled to explore doing this at a more regular cadence. I am cloud economist Corey Quinn. This is the last AWS Morning Brief for 2019. Thank you all so much for listening, for asking good questions and other questions as well, and frankly, for listening to me. If you have any thoughts or feedback, you can find me on Twitter at QuinnyPig, QuinnyPig, or email me at corey@lastweekinaws.com. Have a great 2020, everyone. See you on the other side.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.